Simon from On the White, and we're with
Sandy Toksvig on the White. Did I do that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I get a job?
You can do. I don't know.
Do you freelance as well?
Yeah, I could. You know, for the right fee. Yeah. Okay. Stick a rock.
Yeah. Oh, well, stick a rock. We can go to.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned. Well, I mentioned the freelancing side. We've spent the hour and a half or whatever it is looking through your Wikipedia entry on your creative endeavours, and the list is extensive to say the least. I mean, you just seem to be an output machine.
It's all lies. I go into Wikipedia and edit it, and I've never actually looked to see what's on there. I wonder who does it. It's not me, so I wonder who's putting it in. That's weird, isn't it?
It's pretty detailed. There's lots in there.
Yeah, I keep myself off the streets, that's for sure.
I mean, starting at the on the academic side when you're at college, I was amazed that you were able to get a first and a couple of prizes, as well as doing all of the other bits as well.
It was much easier in those days, I think. These days, exams are very tough for young people. No, I'm kidding. I'm boring. I'm a geek. I worked really hard. And then people say, how do you do all those things? You get up early and you get on. There's nothing like hard work to have a large output. I think life is endlessly interesting. And every day I wake up and I think, oh, do you know what would be fun? And then I go off and see if I can't make that happen.
Right. So, and that includes books, plays, musicals.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. I've just finished a new novel which comes out the third week of August, I think, published by Virago, which is very exciting for me because they're a legendary women's publishing house. I'm very excited to have been taken on by them. And I have a play opening in the West End in October, I think it is. So, yeah, busy.
So you've got a quite strict way of working. Do you wake up early, work for a set period, and then take a break? Or how do you structure your day?
Do you know, I'm just boringly focused. And so I do get up very early and I work. And then sometimes my partner has to ring to where I'm working and say, have you remembered to be excused? And at that moment I realise that my bladder's entirely bursting. So I have a big streak of stupid. But I'm very, very focused. And I get involved in the world that I'm writing or, I don't know, whatever it is producing, and I kind of forget about everything else. As a consequence, I'm not terribly good at crossing the road. I know it's a really odd thing not to be good at, but the number of times I've had my hands on the hot bonnet of a car going, I'm so sorry, I didn't see you, and that's because I'm off with the fairies.
Yeah, you're inhabiting the world you're creating at the time.
Yeah, so please, if you see me near a road, slow down, because, you know, something, wake me up.
And with the move I just was reading about, you moving to Sprout, is that something you've done before, the production side on that?
Yeah, for the last 3 years I've been producing new plays for Sky Television, and I think it's time we had great writing and great acting back on the telly. I'm not against all the reality programmes, I'm not sort of saying, oh, they're terrible. I'm just saying it's been unbalanced, and I think that there's some fabulous talent in this country that's not coming to the fore, and I really, really want to try and help make that happen. So as I was already doing that, Stephen Fry and I have known each other since we were at university. He had a company, it seemed to make sense to join, so it's Stephen's and my address books together. So far we've done quite well, getting great talent into our shows.
So what do you think? That's a sort of a comeback of play for the day, that sort of thing?
That's what I'd like to see, and I'd like to see not just on Sky, which is great that they're doing it, but I'd like to see it give a kick to the other channels to make sure that, you know, those plays which were something about the state of the nation today were terrific, and I think we need them back. And the young woman in the tent here, Hannah, I met her. She's from the Isle of Wight, and I met her at the Theatre Royal. We were doing a show. I thought she was terrific. She's a great writer, and I got her in working at Radio 4. You know, I just want to go out there, find the great talent, and get them going. So,
what's led to that, where the talent hasn't been found in that way? Is it people are too focused on another type of entertainment?
I don't know. I think for a long time, everybody went through a phase where television was made for cheaper prices as it was possible, so you were making things for, I don't know, £5,000 an hour, which is insane amount of, you know, ridiculously small amount of money, and actually what they realise is the public like high quality product. They enjoy it, and they like things to look nice. You know, it doesn't matter what you thought about Downton Abbey, it looked great. You know, whether you thought the storylines were any good or not, it doesn't matter. I'm not so good about the Titanic thing. Lots of people are calling it Drownton Abbey, which I'm quite enjoying. I think it's rather fine. But nevertheless, people like things with a good story, good acting, and that it just is nice to look at. And it's time we brought that back. You know, British television used to be amongst the best in the world, and I think we've been through a kind of fallow period.
There's that weird sort of HBO took it over, really, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And if you look at what Danish television has managed to produce, probably not on very big budgets, and the secret was they decided that the writer must be king. The person who has the idea must be allowed to drive the project forward. And that's one of the things that I'm passionate about.
The little I know about the writing and film process is the writer is the one normally at the end of the pecking order, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's it can be very frustrating.
Have you experienced that?
I have, but I would hate to name names. When you turn the tape off, I'll tell you a story.
But that doing a film and just finding that what you want to do, your original idea, isn't being represented.
Yeah, and that's very, very frustrating. Mm. So we tried very hard, particularly with our plays, to say to the writer, whatever you write is what we will make. Mm. And that's what we did.
So your trip down here today, yes. Is it the first time you've been to the island?
No. Came as a child.
That classic.
So what do I remember? I seem to remember a museum of clocks. There was a clock museum.
I don't know where that was.
No. That's one of my biggest memories. And I'm about to be in the area much more because in September I'm the new Chancellor of Portsmouth University.
Right. So in all the spare time you've got, you're going to be doing that?
Yeah, I thought, you know, I had a few days where I wasn't doing anything in the year. Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's great. And to be able to encourage young people in all walks of life will be very exciting for me.
Because you were given an honorary PhD as well from there.
I think that's how they inveigled me
is
in.
Is it? That's the first thing, is it?
Although I have to say, it's not my only honorary PhD, and other universities have just left it at that. So Portsmouth, a little bit on the greedy side, frankly.
And what's your day-to-day involvement, and why Portsmouth?
I just really liked the place when I came down. I think it's energetic and vibrant. I think lots of stuff is happening. I feel very passionately that we are in danger of doing a disservice to the next generation by excluding people who feel that they don't want to get into debt, by excluding, it's like the intern system. It's rich kids who can afford to be an intern and not be paid for 6 months. And it's not the generation of, you know, we should all be on a level playing field. The day a child is born, it shouldn't matter which bed they're born in that determines how they turn out. This potential in everybody. And so I feel really passionately about kids' education. I loved Portsmouth when I came down. They asked me, and I just thought, yeah, well, that's great. It's an honour. I mean, I don't know why they asked me, but I'm thrilled.
Mm. And obviously you've got a lot to give for it as well, you feel.
I hope so. What do I know? You know, you would never sell yourself. No, it's not like I applied. Yeah. I hope so. If nothing else, I'm passionate about life. Grab life by the throat. Mm. And hopefully that's a starting point. To any child who's become disillusioned at all, you say to them, do you know what? It is a fantastic life. Mm. And how could you ever be bored? In the whole world, how could you ever be bored? You know, there's always something interesting to see or to do or to, and that isn't about having money. You know, I defy anybody in Britain not to get on a bus at the end of their lane and have it take you somewhere interesting.
Mm. Mm. So you are sort of a gobbler of facts, are you? You're someone who just cannot stop taking information in.
It isn't just facts, though. What is that expression about people who have a head full of facts and not a thought in their head? So I think it isn't just facts. It's looking and hopefully having some original ideas as well, it's important. It's important you do a combination of the two.
Right, that's interesting, isn't it? Because that thing about the factual side, it doesn't necessarily stimulate the imagination.
No, absolutely. And the only thing facts are good for is that you can win Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Mm. Unless they prompt you to have an original thought, I think they're slightly pointless. Mm. So I like to think it's a combination of the two things, which is to take in lots of information and then use it and put it together. It's like Lego, right? Lego is a fantastic metaphor for that, because it's like lots of little bricks that you've got, but everybody can make something different. And I think the worst thing that happened to Lego was when they only produced those models that said, you put it together like this. Well, how annoying is that? I like the basic bricks where you make cars and planes and boats and towns and people and,
I mean, they're amazingly engineered, the Lego bricks themselves, aren't they? I had a friend who did some work with us, and then he was obsessed with Lego, and then is now working for Lego. But he told me that the engineering, the tolerances on it, is something extraordinary.
Yeah. I mean, they are astonishing. I think, I forget which is, that's one of those weird things I know in my head. I think there are 63 Lego bricks per person on the planet. Well, he's no good to me, that information, unless we build something.
He used to buy the Lego by the weight. I mean, it's hardcore.
I have a house in Denmark. It's not far from the Lego factory. And there's a place that's not open to the public called the Dream Room. And they allow artists to go in there and have any Lego they want, wow, and create whatever they want. And it's one of the most magical places I've ever been.
Wow. And do you get people to help you? Because, I mean, that's a lot of construction, isn't it?
I don't know. I was only allowed to. I gawped. I didn't actually make anything. I just gawped at the artists and left.
And told them what's possible.
Yeah.
So when we were talking before about, well, Sal was saying one thing she really liked about listening to the news quiz was that how you seem to be having so much fun while you're doing it, and that's important for you, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend to anybody to come to an actual recording, because we record about an hour and a quarter for a 28-minute show, and the best stuff always gets edited out because it's filth, filth and libel in fairly equal measure.
Right.
We do cry with laughter, but those are highly intelligent, funny people. You know, I don't really do anything. I just sit there and have the pleasure of everybody being funny.
Mm.
You know, to sit with Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton and people like that and have them pontificate on. Well, it's a gift, isn't it? Theresa May's inability to read a calendar is just one of those joyous moments in your life that you just think, oh, thank you so much. How kind. Or the Spanish king deciding to go and shoot an elephant in the recession. It's just heaven.
Yeah.
So, honestly, it's not difficult.
I mean, this time that we're in now, where there seems to be a vast amount of money around in a very select number of places, or controlled by a select number of people. We were talking about Play for Today before. Is there the parallels of the sort of explosion of punk? There's a gloss to everything, so it doesn't feel like the times are quite as dire as they were when punk exploded. But do you think that there's a time for that, sort of an ignition of a new idea like that?
I mean, I think it would be great. And I, you know, I'm afraid, not that I approved in any way of the riots that we had last year. It was just good to see people getting that cross. I do think we are in a not good state. I do think that they're very busy putting taxes on static caravans when it's only people in the lower income population who use static caravans. What about all the rich people with 2-3 homes? What about all the people in, you know, fantastic palaces? What about all those people who avoid their tax, the huge companies? Nobody's going after them.
Mm.
So, politically, I think we are, and I do not believe that the recession has hit.
Right.
I have a friend of mine in Lancashire whose partner works in a pie shop, and this tax on pasties could cost her job, because this is the food of workmen, and they're not coming in now because it's going to be too expensive. So you think it's only 30-40p? That's the difference between somebody being able to afford to do that at lunchtime and not. And then that's the difference between somebody having their job and not. So, you know, it's all very well being amused that David Cameron can't remember where he last ate a pasty. It's somebody's life we're talking about, and I'm not sure that Parliament is connected to that anymore.
I mean, I think generally people who have jobs, who earn salaries of a reasonable level, there is a massive disconnect from that and the reality of what the rest of the people go through.
Yeah, I do think that, and I don't quite know how we reconnect with it. And my worry is
because there's no ability to understand it, because those people never see that.
And the worst of it is, I think that all. A large percentage of the population has become utterly disenchanted with politics, to the point where they don't believe anybody anymore.
Mm. And is that purposeful? Do you think making everyone believe that you can't believe anyone?
I don't know. What worries me mostly is that the answer that almost every politician of every hue now gives you is, well, we didn't communicate it properly. As if actually the public were too stupid to understand what was a terribly good idea. You know, there are some things that are really simple to understand. Nick Clegg promised that he would stand by no tuition fees. He promised.
I heard his latest excuse this week.
What was it?
Well, you know, we're not in control of the government, so of course we couldn't do anything about it. We had to go along with it.
Right, so what's the point of him then?
Yeah.
Actually, it's quite a good question. What is the point of him?
I think that's the title of many books being written at the moment. Well, thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
No, I'm delighted to be here. What fun. I wish I had longer to stay.